Okay, so today is Saturday, November 22nd, and we're in the radio studios at WILL in Urbana, Illinois, and I'm Kimberly Cronick, and with me is Rose. Hi, Rose.
Hi, it's Kimberly.
Thanks for doing this.
You're welcome.
So I want to start with asking you to tell me your where you grew up. Where were you born, and who were your parents?
Okay, I was born in Fajardo, Puerto Rico, and my parents, they both were born in Puerto Rico also. There were four of us, the three girls and three girls and one boy. My brother was the oldest.
And are they still living?
My mom's still living. She's 93.
And where does she live now?
She's in a nursing home in Lake Zurich, Illinois.
And when did your father pass away?
95. He was 87.
Okay. And what are your siblings' names?
Larry is my oldest brother, my only brother. And then there's Lee, and then Ray, and myself in the middle.
Okay. And what, Rose, is your earliest childhood memory of growing up?
My earliest childhood memory, I remember just about crawling. I was just walking, but a little crawling. And I was playing with this little red ball. And my brother, who's 4 years older than me, was frying something in the frying pan. And we had one of those stoves that got four legs so you could crawl underneath it, you know, and they had a gas thing on the side. And my ball rolled under the stove where he was frying this thing, so I decided to go and get it. And when I was under there, I decided to look under the stove and see. Meanwhile, my brother was going to move one of those things he was frying, and he dropped it. And I remember hitting me right in the stomach. And I guess because I got burned, I remember that.
Oh, wow. And you were about four?
I think so, somewhere around there, you know.
And do you remember who took care of you after the burn?
My dad. My dad is the one that I always remember taking care of me about everything. You know, he took me, I remember him taking me to the dentist. I remember my dad taking me to have my pictures taken. I remember my dad always doing everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was it like for him to do those things? How did you feel towards your dad?
Oh, I adore my dad. I love my dad. I mean, I always felt that he thought I was perfect person, never could have do anything wrong. And he always, you know, even made it very obvious that I was his favorite of the three girls. You know, and we got along real well. My dad was alcoholic, and he admits to that. And but he stopped drinking before I was born, so I never saw my dad drink.
And when did you learn that he was an alcoholic? How did you come to know that information?
He told us. He just was very open with it that he drinking. He used to call it more than a disease. He called it a sin. And he became very religious after he stopped drinking, and he claims that God helped him give up that way of life. And and then he just became very involved in the church, and he was doing everything that he thought was the right thing to do.
And how did he talk about God? What did you learn about God through your father's embracing of religion?
Both of my parents kind of used God to control us. And whenever we did something that they didn't approve of, they always told us that God was going to punish us, or that we were going to go to hell if we didn't do things the right way. So that's kind of the God I grew up with, believing that he was always just waiting for me to do something wrong to punish me, you know. I tried to be good, but I didn't make it all the time.
And so is your concept of God different than what your parents taught you, or what is your concept of God now?
Oh, my concept of God is so different. My God is very in my life. He's around me, and in me, you know. The God that I grew up with was very far away, you know, somewhere busy with big stuff, but not really into my life. And today I believe in a God that's very concerned about everything about me. And I don't believe that he's a punishing God, and I don't have a concept of, I cannot believe on a God that will burn people in hell forever, you know, if you didn't do exactly what you're supposed to do, because we're not capable, or I wasn't capable.
So how do you describe or explain the difference in what you feel about God now and what you were taught growing up? Where did that change take place?
It took place when I came into the program, a 12-step program.
And tell me more about that. Why did you come into a 12-step program?
I came into the 12-step program by the grace of God, I think, and I thank the God every day, in May 30th of 1979. And my husband came first. He had a drinking problem, and he decided to get help. And after he was in for a few days, he informed me that there was a program for families of alcoholics, and I decided, or I didn't decide, he wanted me to go, and I did. I was not very happy with the program, and I did not care for it right off the bat either.
What is it that you didn't like about it?
I felt that it was another thing that I had to do for my husband. So I wasn't there for me. I was there doing another thing for him. So I wasn't interested in hearing what the people were, they were talking about themselves. I don't think I was paying attention. All I was thinking is, I'm going to stay here until he starts drinking again, then I just don't have to come to these meetings anymore.
So what was your relationship with your husband like by this point when you got to your first meeting?
I was ready to divorce my husband. I did not want to be in the situation that I was in anymore. I was going to leave my husband a couple of times before that, but I always was waiting for the kids to get older so I could manage taking care of them. I always felt that when I left, there was going to be no more contact with him. So I knew that I would be on my own. And that scared me. So I kept putting it off. And so I was ready to leave at one time in 1968. And then I found out I was pregnant with my fourth child. So then I decided I was had to wait till she was older before I could leave. And then in 79, then I decided that she was old enough we could manage. And my other three children were on their own. They got married, and my son was in the Air Force. So I knew I could manage taking care of her, so I would make that decision.
And you're still married to the same husband?
Yes, I am.
So what changed from you wanting to divorce him to where you are now?
Sobriety, main thing, and I don't think sobriety alone would have done it, but sobriety with the program did it, and he is a complete different person than the person I knew before the program.
And how would you, so did you fall in love with someone who's different than he is now, and he's different than when you first knew him, so it seems kind of, well, it's lucky that the person he became is someone you still love.
Yes. I had to almost learn to love him all over again in a different way than I did before the program, because we got married very young. I was 16 and he was 19. And he was not alcoholic when I married, or acted like an alcoholic. Probably had all the symptoms there, but we didn't drink, because we couldn't afford it in the first place. And all those times, I saw the progression of alcoholism because of being so young when we got married, and saw how he changed through the year. So eventually, when I decided I was going to leave him, he was not the same person that I had married in the first place. The alcohol had taken a toll on him, and he was a complete different person. So it was just like maybe I like when the program says restore you to sanity, restore my relationship also, because it restored to what it was at the beginning when we really care for each other and, you know.
And what, so tell me about how you thought you had to go to this program. It was another thing to do for him, and then when he started drinking again, you'd get out. But did he start drinking again and you stayed, or what happened?
He has not ever drank again all the time we've been in the program. So I never had the opportunity to leave. I used to say that I'm just here until he starts drinking and I'm out. I'm gone. But you cannot sit in the program and listen to people keep talking. And even that to me was so amazing that even when I did not want to learn anything, I started learning. I could hear the other people telling my story. I could hear the other people reacting the same way I did. I could hear them sharing things that I felt, but I never knew how to put them into words.
So can you recall something? Is there a moment or in that? How long have you been going to the program, and when did you start?
I started in 79.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and today is 2008, so almost 30 years.
Yes.
What are some of those changes? Do you remember some of those early realizations when you didn't want to learn and then you realized you were? Can you?
One of the first things I remember learning was I used to always think I was a very dutiful person, but I was not a responsible person for myself. And I think that was one of the first lessons that I learned, was that I had to be responsible for myself, that I could not go on blaming other people for all the things that happened to me, that I had to take responsibility.
And tell me in a specific way the difference between being dutiful and taking responsibility.
For me, being dutiful was, I took care of my kids, I clean house, I bathed them, fed them, made sure that they were 3 meals, I did all the things that I thought, you know, a mom's supposed to do. I always was a good daughter. I always stayed in contact with my family, my sisters and my brothers and my dad and my mom. So I thought all those things were dutiful things that you had to do. I did not know that I could make decisions for myself that might be different from what somebody else would want, or I would go along with whatever anybody wanted to do, and did not know that I could make my own decisions. For some reason, I just didn't know that.
And can you remember a time when that switched for you and you made a decision, how you felt and what you did and what the outcome was?
The one that really stands out for me is a Thanksgiving day. And my daughter was married, and she lived in Lafayette, Indiana, and we were in Illinois. And she wanted us to come over for Thanksgiving, and we agreed to go over. But one of the things that my husband had done for years was that if we got him angry or he got angry at us, then he would change our plans always and say, okay, we're not going, and that was the end of that, and we never went. And we did this many a time when the kids were growing up too, which I always felt real bad, that they were so excited about something, but we all walk on eggshells, so if we wanted to do something. And the same thing happened that day, and he says, the day before Thanksgiving, he says, I'm not going to Thanksgiving over there. And I said, okay. And it was the first time that the realization came to me that he wasn't going, but that didn't mean that I could not go or take my one daughter that was still at home. So the next morning, got up and told my daughter, come on, we're going to go over to your sister's for Thanksgiving. And she says, but that's it, we were not going. I said, no, he said he was not going. And I think that was one of those, moments in your life that you see clarity for the first time.
And so what happened the next morning?
He was, we came back and he was fine. He was, you know, he was really nice, and after, he didn't like spending Thanksgiving all by himself. So he didn't pull that on us much, you know, he tried a couple of times after that, but then he didn't do that much anymore because he knew I would not react the same way I always reacted. We went through a lot of fights and a lot of, for the first 5-6 years of the in the program. When I started changing, he fought me because it was unfamiliar to both of us, and he liked the way things were before, you know, where he had the control. And it was a fearful for me because I didn't know how things were going to turn out a lot of times, you know.
And what were some of the changes that you started to, that were happening in your life? How were you different?
I started seeing and the things that that bothered me, that I was afraid of, my fears. I never was aware that I was so fearful of so many things. I always thought I was a pretty gutsy person and I was a mouthy person, but yet I could not tell anybody what I really felt or what I really wanted. Asking for somebody to do something for me was just, just a real hard thing to do, and I couldn't imagine why. I still to this day don't know exactly where that come from, but I know that I can do it today, but it's still not the most comfortable thing to do. I think that's some of the changes that I saw right away.
And what did the way you parent your kids change through the program, or how old were they when you got in?
When I got in the program, my youngest daughter was 11. And my son was 20, and my oldest daughter was 23, and the other one was 22.
Okay, so only one was at home, the 11-year-old?
Yes.
Okay. Did the way you related to her change as part of your changes?
Oh, yes. I started allowing her to have her own relationship with her dad. I didn't step in and try to protect her, or did not tell her how she was to behave so she would not get him angry or disappointed. So then, and I started being able to tell him when, like, if she got bad grades in school or if she got in trouble, I let him know it too, which it was something I always kept with the other kids. I mean, you know, we lied a lot and cover up a lot, so we didn't have to deal with him.
So, for example, what's an example of that? Grades or...?
Of my one daughter, when she got in trouble in school, there was one time that she was sliding in the kitchen, you know, trying to slide on the linoleum or the tile, and she hit the cabinet door, and when she landed on it, she broke it. And my husband really got angry, and when he got real angry, he could get foul mouth. And he called her a few names that, you know, were not appropriate. And she came to me crying, you know, that he said those things to her. And I said, well, why are you telling them to me? I said, why don't you go to him and tell him that you don't appreciate him telling those things to you? And she says, oh, he'll get so mad. And I says, that's okay. You know, if he gets mad, he gets mad. And I stayed close enough that things would not get out of control, that he would hit her or anything like that. But she went and told him, and he couldn't even, when she said, Dad, I do not like you calling me names that are not true about me. And he says, I didn't say those things. And I guess when he got mad, he did not realize what he was saying, you know. But she said, yes, you did, and I don't appreciate it. I don't want you to say those things to me anymore. And he really was very careful how he talked to her after that.
Tell me, how did you, I'll go way back now, how did you get from Puerto Rico to the U.S.?
My uncle was working at the steel mills in Chicago. And he was making good money for, you know, in the 50s working there, and he told my dad that he should come over here because he could make so much more money than he could in Puerto Rico. So we sold everything we had. We had a little grocery store and our home and everything else to get our fares, and we all came to Chicago. Well, my dad tried to work at the steel mill, but he couldn't do it. And so he worked at a lumber yard instead. And it was so much harder to make ends meet in the States, though, than was in Puerto Rico, even though he was making maybe two times or three times as much money. But it was so much cheaper over there because, first of all, you didn't have to deal with winter and winter clothes and any of that stuff. And we grew a lot of stuff in our yard and all that kind of stuff. So that was the reason we came. But that was a very trying time for me too. I really hated it. I did not like Chicago. I wanted my dad to go back, but we could not go back. And I got very angry at that time. And I hated school because I could not understand anybody. We didn't speak the language. And in those days, there was no help available in school at all. There was nobody in school that spoke Spanish. So you were on your own. There was one teacher that I never forget. He spent hours with me with a book with pictures on it, pointing to the picture and telling me what it was. But it took around 2 years before there was some communication in the school system where you could start learning again.
And how old were you when you left Puerto Rico?
I was 11.
And going back to your home in Puerto Rico, what do you remember about it? Who did you, you lived with your parents and your three siblings?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about what the house looked like and where
it was. In Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
Our house was, it was wood on the outside, and it had, the top of it was aluminum or that kind of ceilings that are, they're like blinds, you know, they go in and out. And which I used to always like because when it rained, you could really hear the rain. And it was a very small house. I remember we had one little bedroom and one large bedroom, a living room and a kitchen. And it was outdoor, the bathroom, you know, you had to go. But we had a sink inside that had water, but somehow we did not connect the bathroom to the water line. So I remember our furniture was nice. We had a lot of the wood furniture with cane, seats and stuff like that, you know. But it was different.
What do you remember of your earliest childhood memory of school? And that would be in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I love school in Puerto Rico. I like school. I was good, had good grades in school. I enjoyed school. We used to walk to school, and I remember when you came out of school, there was a little guy with a cart that sold oranges, and he peeled them, and you could buy them when you came out of school, and cost you a penny. Peel, no? You know, fruits were very available, and I don't remember ever eating sweets and candy and stuff when I was a young girl. But, you know, those are the memories I got of school.
So you said you walked to school?
Yeah, we walked to school and walked back home. And we didn't go to the private schools that were all Catholic because we were not Catholic. So we could not go to the Catholic school. The Catholic school kids all wore uniforms, and we did not.
And do you remember any of your teachers from kindergarten, their names or anything
No.
special? What about first grade?
I remember a teacher in first grade because she was my godmother, and she was also my teacher, so I remember her. And I remember this other teacher, but I don't remember her name, but she really wanted me to do something, and I told her I wasn't going to do it. I was probably in kindergarten, first grade, and she told me that if I didn't, I was going to get hit, because then those days they hit you in school if you didn't behave. And I said, well, if you hit me, I'm going to tell my dad on you. And she says, well, you go ahead and tell your dad, and I'll tell him, too. And I remember having this argument with her about it, you know.
And in the end, did you get hit?
No, she didn't hit. I really don't remember whether I got hit or not. But I remember going home and telling my dad about it. And he went to school the next day and talked to her. And so, you know, I always knew my dad was going to take care of anything I did or got in trouble with or whatever. And that always been my, it was my trail all the way through, even when I got grown up.
Are there other examples where you felt your dad's, it sounds like you're saying he maybe not protected you, but was there for you?
My dad was there for me. And another example, I was older when I got, right before I got married, I got pregnant. And it was my dad I went to and told that I was pregnant. And he says, well, what are you going to do about it? And I said, I think we're going to get married. And he said, okay. You know, that was it, nothing else. Why, my mom got really angry and just blew the whole thing out of proportion and tell me how, well, what a shame I was bringing to the family and all that stuff, you know. But
so tell me about your mom growing up. What do you remember of her? What's your earliest member of your relationship with her?
My relationship with my mom was my, okay, I had my older sister, the one that was ahead of me. She was 2 years older than me. We were all 2 years apart. And she was handicapped. She was born with a defect on her left side, her arm and leg and everything. And she had to have a lot of surgery and a lot of stuff when she was real young. I remember that, you know. But my mom just took care of her all the time. And whatever she wanted, we had to give in to her. And her, me being younger than her, that used to really aggravate me, you know, that she was the one that got all the attention. She's the one that got everything. If she wanted a toy, if I had a toy she wanted, I had to give it to her. And I really resented my sister, and I resented my mother for favoring her. So I didn't have a good relationship with my mom.
And you said earlier, though, that your dad favored you.
Yes. So kind of, I always felt that that evened things out. My poor little sister didn't get nobody, so I always felt bad for her.
So how is your relationship with your mom, who's still living?
I love my mom, and I have dealt with all the stuff that happened, you know, when I was growing up with her. I'm going to give you some examples of the things with my mom was very fearful person also, and she never confronted anybody face to face. She always manipulated, and she always got things done manipulating, which I learned real well myself as I grew up. I mean, one time there was something somebody said about a neighbor, and she came in, and me and my older sister were sitting there, and she says, can I tell so-and-so that one of you girls told me that? And my sister said, oh, no, not me. And I said, well, as long as you know I didn't say it, you can tell her I said it. I don't care. And she said, okay. So she went and told this neighbor that I was the one that told her something. And I don't even remember what it was now. Well, the neighbor got very angry at her. So in order for her to show the neighbor that she was going to take care of that, she came in the house, and I got spanked really hard. And I could not understand that why she was hitting me when she told me to say that and that she knew I didn't say it. But it was a way to make herself look good to this neighbor. So I always felt that her wanting to look good to people was more important than our relationship was. So that was one of the things. And I had to deal with that when I came in the program. And, you know, I'm fine with it now. I know where she come from and how fearful she was and how much she didn't know how to take care of herself either.
Did your mom and you ever talk about your father's alcoholism?
Oh, yeah. She talked about him. She always talked very negative about him, though. She never dealt with any of the hurt feelings that she had because there was no program then, you know, and all the abuse, all the things that went on, you know, she talked very openly about it. And I didn't like to hear her talk like that about my dad because I loved him so. I hate it when, you know, she went on and on and on about him.
And so your parents stayed married till your father passed away?
No, they stayed married, yeah. I told him he passed away, but they didn't live together for maybe the last 15 years when he was alive.
Where did they live?
They live in two different apartments in senior citizen places.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What can you... Did your parents talk to you at all before you made the move from Puerto Rico to hear what it would be like and the challenges? Did they talk with you?
No, they did not. This one lady that I used to babysit, her little boy, and she been to the United States a lot of time. Her husband was a lawyer, and I remember, and she told me, she says, it's not what you think it's going to be like when you get over there, like the pictures are showing and all that. She says it's going to be a lot different. She was the only person that told me that before, but we were not asked whether we wanted to or not. It was just, this is what we're going to do, and that was it, you know.
So you said your dad didn't quite make it in the, he worked in a lumber yard instead of the steel mill.
Mm-hmm.
And what did your mom do?
My mom went to work in a factory. For the first time, my mom left the house because she never worked outside the home before.
And which factory was that?
Consolidated. They make transformers for televisions.
Did you ever visit her at her workplace?
Yeah, I went there. I worked there in the summer times, too, when I was out of school.
Oh, really? How did you like it?
It was fun. You know, you got paid by, they pay you $1 an hour. So that was a lot of money to make back in those days. Mm-hmm. It was nice.
And did you ever go to the lumber yard with your dad?
No, I don't think I did that. I don't remember going to the lumber yard.
You said that you and your husband got married, decided after you were pregnant. What was the wedding like? What was that like?
We went to City Hall with my brother, my best girlfriend, and my father, because my father had a sign for me because I was only 16. And we got married there. I got our license and got married. And then we went to this Italian restaurant in Chicago and had dinner. And that was it. Then I had to borrow some money from my dad so we could go get a hotel because neither one of us had any money.
So where did you live after you got married?
We lived in this, we got us an apartment.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to turn this off.
Yeah, go ahead.
And for some reason it's not doing it. Cell phones, I forgot to turn mine off. Okay, now I'll turn it off because I didn't take the call. Okay, good. Now it's off. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm sorry. So tell me what happened. You got married. You didn't have money for the honeymoon suite, the hotel. So what was your next step? You're married, then what?
Then my husband went to work. I'm trying to think where he worked when we got married. I cannot remember exactly what he did when we first got married. But anyway, he worked in some place, but, you know, we didn't make a lot of money. And I could not go to school anymore because in those days you were not allowed to go to school if you were pregnant. So I had to leave school, which got me real angry about that. He could go to school, but I could not go to school. I tried getting a few jobs, and then he worked in some job, but nothing that paid a lot. Then he started driving a pop truck, I remember, and delivering pop to the grocery stores. I worked at the Chicago Credit Bureau for a little bit, and some jobs like that, you know, but I didn't keep my job very long. Then I had the baby, and then I never worked again.
How did you get from, how long did you live in Chicago, and then when did you come to Champaign?
Okay. We lived in Chicago until all my kids, or the first three kids were born in Chicago. So that was in 59. We got married in 56 and in 59, or probably 60, we left Chicago and moved to Cincinnati, Ohio. We stayed in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's when my husband went into sales in the heating and air conditioning. And we stayed in Cincinnati for a year, and then we moved to Pittsburgh. And then we stayed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for like 7 years. And then he decided to move again, and we moved back to Indiana. And then we moved to Denver for a while, and then we moved to California too. We were moving a lot because he was very unsettled. This is through all these years, the developing of alcoholism was taking place. Because when my husband got into sales, we started making a lot more money. So then we were able to go out and we were able to drink. And then we started drinking a lot more in our, you know, lifestyle.
And when you went from then California to Champaign?
We went from California back to Anderson, Indiana. And from Indiana, went to Lafayette and from Lafayette to Champaign. Oh, wow.
So when did you first start noticing that your husband's drinking bothered you? And what did you first try to do?
I started noticing that he's drinking. I never thought it was his drinking. I always thought it was his behavior was starting to bother me. We both drank quite a bit, and we both went out a lot. We both liked the nightlife, went to a lot of clubs and a lot of stuff. And one thing, my husband always wanted me to be with him. So when we first got to Cincinnati, it was the first place we moved away from family. I had never had anybody watch my kids but my mom, my dad, or my sisters. So I figured, well, I cannot go out anymore because now I don't know who will stay with the kids. So this neighbor of mine, I always so thankful to her. She was one of those people that come into your life just when you need them. She was a Jewish girl from New York. And she says, Rose, how come you don't drive? And I said, I don't know. I just never learned how to drive, you know. I said, we didn't need to in Chicago. You know, you just take, you go anywhere you want to on buses or streetcars or else. And she says, you should learn how to drive. And I said, well, Sam said he was going to teach me. And he would say that every time I said, I want to learn how to drive. He said, I'll teach you, but never got done. So she says, hey, call a driving school and get a license and learn how to drive. And thank God I did that because I could not imagine life without driving after that. And so she helped me do that, and she helped me, you know, through the between the lessons to drive and all that. And then she says, how can you stay home all the time? And your husband goes out of it, and I said, well, I have to stay home with the kids. And she said, haven't you heard about babysitters? And so she was like, I live in another world that she came from. And I said, you mean somebody I don't know? And she said, yeah, well, the girl upstairs, you know her, and she's 17, she'll babysit, you know. And so then when I discovered babysitting. So I was gone all the time.
And were you gone on your own or with Sam?
No, with husband? Sam.
Uh-huh. And what? How old were you then when you got your license?
I was 21. I mean, 20. Somehow.
20. Mm-hmm. And so you were born in 1940. Mm-hmm. So, wow, you moved here when you were 11, mm-hmm. and between 11 and 21, you lived in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. No, after I left Chicago at 20, after 20, we lived in a lot of places.
So you said that your husband's behavior was what bothered you. You didn't connect it to the alcohol?
No.
When did that connection happen for you?
I'm trying to think. There was one time, 10 years prior to coming to the program, my husband came to me and he says, Rose, I'm having problem with drinking. And I said, I know you drink too much. And he says, well, I don't know what to do about it. I said, well, don't drink so much and you'll be just fine. And that was the end of the conversation. He was never touched on it no more.
Did it ever come back up again? Did he ever try to use that to blame you? Like, I tried to go to help and you didn't take it seriously? Or
no, both of us put it behind. No, he said, he claims that he knew he had a problem and he kept trying to cope with it. But it was never, I never had a discussion with him about it. I always was fighting with him about what he did. You know, like not show up for dinner, tell me he was going to be one place and then be in another, you know, buy cars when we couldn't afford them, you know, could he go in and trade the cars, stuff like that. I mean, this is what I would fight about with him. And so I never associated a lot of that stuff with his drinking. He just keeps making these irrational decisions that are driving me crazy, you know. One time he left from work, and the next thing he called me, he was in Calgary, Canada. And he says, I'm over in Calgary, Canada. And I said, what the hell are you doing in Calgary, Canada? He said, I'm checking on the place out for business, you know. Him and his body got drinking, and they just took off, you know. And that was just, oh, I mean, then that's when I leave him or, you know, go home and or do all kinds of irrational things, you know, because I was so angry at him all the time for doing crazy things.
Like, how did your, what are some of the thoughts in your head and what kinds of ways did it affect the way you treated him and, you know, your family?
I was always angry. I remember that. That's the only thing, the only feeling I can remember recognizing. I was angry all the time. So I was angry at my kids also, which wasn't fair, but that's what I did. They would, oh, they would, I would lose my cool real fast. I would hit my kids, and I would holler and scream at them a lot. And with my husband, I was very angry at him most of the time. And when I was not angry, then we were always extremes. You know, I was either angry at him or we were lovey-dovey. And we were from one extreme to the other. And he, if he did something wrong, he got me mad, then he go out and he buy me some pretty rings or furs or whatever. And he bring them home, then I'd be happy. He was very manipulative type person. He, if he wanted to get us drinking, he tried quit drinking quite a few times, you know. And even though he just said, let's not drink anymore, so that was fine with me. I didn't have no problem with it. And then he'll want to drink again, then he'll say, oh, let's fix a dinner, a real nice dinner. And of course, there had to be wine and there had to be all this stuff, you know. So before we know, we were drinking again. There was one time that I was really ready to leave him. I'm trying to think of when, right after, I don't know if it was after my last daughter was born or not. Dates are really hard to keep track of when you're all over the place. And then he said, yeah, it was right after my youngest daughter was born. And she was born in 68. And he said that he was going to quit drinking because I told him I was leaving. I was going to cut out and that was the end of that. And so he quit drinking for like 3 months. We didn't drink. And that's when we moved to Lafayette, Indiana. And then he bought a new business there. And we started a complete new life with new people. And we started playing golf, joined the club and play golf. And the kids, you know, started like school there and everything and got a real nice house. And just things seems to be going just fine. And then we decided, oh, well, we could have a drink maybe once a week on the weekend. And then it became twice a week. Then it was three times a week. And pretty soon we were right back. But it took a period of 10 years to do that, though.
And what finally got you in? Oh, that's right. Your husband told you about the program. Okay, mm-hmm. What got him in?
He got himself in. Memorial Weekend. And we were in Chicago, and we were up at my brother's house having a picnic. And when he was at the point now that he did not like to drink when we were all around because he wanted to drink more or, you know, different than we were drinking. So he got into an argument with my brother, and then he just got up. He says, I don't have to put up with this kind of stuff, and he got in the car and he left. Well, I had made up my mind that I was not going to go back with him, that was it. And I told my brother first, I said, you know, I'm not going to go back with Sam. I'm going to leave him. And he says, well, I don't want to get involved in the middle of it. You two, you know, I just do what you need to do. So then I was talking to my sister, and my sister told me, she said, you can come and stay with me until you get things square away and everything. So I did. I went over to my sister's house, and I was going to stay living with her until I could get a job and decide what I was going to do. And Sam got into the hotel he was staying, and he locked himself out of the room in the middle of the night. He thought he was going to a restroom, and he went to the hall instead, you know, and he had to go downstairs and get himself the guy to let him back in the room. And I think the embarrassment of all that just kick in or something, because I think he went back home and he called this guy that was in the program that he knew that had worked for us. And the guy took him to his first meeting, you know. So it was something I didn't have nothing to do with, or, you know, he just, but I was ready to move out of the way. And I remember praying before I decided to leave. And I was so sad that it wasn't going to work after all those years. And I remember asking God to forgive me for leaving him, because I thought that was sinful to walk away from your marriage. And I felt that God had given me this job to do, to help him straighten him up, and I couldn't do it. And so those were my thoughts about God at that time, you know. And I felt really bad, but I felt really, that's the first time I remember just really praying to God and telling him, I cannot do it anymore. I just don't know how. I just cannot. I don't know what to do. So you take care of him. I'm walking out, and he's your problem, not mine. And it was like 2 days later, he was in the program.
And why did you change your decision? I mean, what happened between that him leaving and your decision and him getting in the program?
Then he went in the program, and then he called me, and he says, I called my one daughter that lived in Lafayette, and I asked her, no, she was living in Champaign now then, and I asked her to come and pick me up. Or no, they were up north with us, I'm sorry. They were there with us, and so I came back with her to pick up my car, so I would have a car. And when I got back home, he was there, and then he asked me, would you stay? I went into this program, and I think it's really going to work. And I says, I don't think so, because you have lied so many times before about, you know, that you will quit or you will not be different, and you still the same thing, you know. And he said, no, this is supposed to be different. And I says, you know, so I said, I don't know, I don't think. And I remember my youngest daughter, she kept saying, Mom, please don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. He's lying. You know, he's always lying. She didn't want me to stay. So I decided, I said, I tell you what, and that's when I decided, I said, I'll stay, but if you start, you even have one drink, I'm out. I'm going. And that was our agreement.
And he kept that agreement?
He kept that agreement. He never had a drink again.
So at that time when you made that promise about not drinking, did you fully understand alcoholism?
No, I did not.
So looking at yourself now, and what would you say to that Rose of that age from the Rose of today?
What would I say to her if I was talking to her and I was where I am today? I would tell her that once she started going into the program, or once that she made that commitment to stay with her husband, that she needed to get help. Because the thought that I would have left at that time, as sick as I was, scares me to death, because I don't know where I would have ended up at. And so to me, that was something that had been so important, you know, is not only leaving the person, but it's getting help yourself. Because without getting help yourself, you're still the same person, and you're going to end up in more than likely on the same situation that you were before, if not worse.
And so why do you think the two of you stayed married and survived all these changes in your, or how would you describe your relationship and how it's, what it was and what it is? And it seems like a miracle that someone could change so much and stay as they're changing. I guess I'm always amazed by that.
Before you, I did not know myself, and I'm sure he did not either. We were very attracted to each other physically. And our relationship was based on our physical attraction more than anything else. my husband, he was always a gentle, loving person, except when he started drinking, and then he behaved in a way that wasn't that way. He never, you know, he amazes me today. Like, a girl gets pregnant, and the guy would just completely ignore that these were his children. My husband always took full responsibility for our kids and full responsibility that they were his obligation. He, matter of fact, he was kind of sad because he thought that's all a dad had to do was support the family, and the rest, you know, he didn't have no commitment other than that. But I forgot your question.
Just the way this marriage survived and transformed, and you were saying what it was based on. And
right. And then today we have such a wonderful relationship. I mean, but it took years. You know, this is something that happened over a lot of years in the program, almost 30 years. I would say, you know, the first 10 were hard because it was two people trying to find themselves and know themselves and still live with each other. And we came very close during those years to get separated and leave, you know, because I didn't think we were going to make it. But somehow things always happened that we kept struggling on and moving on and kept going to meetings. That's the only thing that saved me. We kept going to the meetings. For some reason, I did not get a sponsor, which was not very smart of me. There was a person in the program that had a sponsor. Sponsors were not talked a whole lot as they are now in the program. And she had a sponsor, and every time she was going to do anything, she would say, oh, I have to run this past my sponsor to see if she is okay for me to do this or do that. And I thought, God, I don't want a sponsor because I have hard enough time with my husband. I don't want another person telling me what to do. So I disregarded the idea completely because that's what a sponsor meant to me at that time. But kept going to meetings, and then we started going to a lot of conventions, and we listened to a lot of tapes of people sharing their stories and learn a lot through those tapes. I think tapes are just a terrific thing for people to hear.
So let me get this timeline. So you were married at 16, and then it was about 12 years later when you were 38 that you got into the program?
I was 39 years old when I got in the program.
And it was 10 years of real struggle.
Yes.
And when did you get your sponsor? How many years in?
I did not have a sponsor. I had really, really good friends in the program that had a lot of time in the program. And we spent a lot of time together with them. And they were the ones that, you know, they were there for me to talk with. They were the ones that would share things and stuff like that. I did not get a sponsor till maybe the last 5 years that I actually said, I need to ask somebody to be my sponsor, you know. And I did.
And what made the change? What was that turning point after being in the program, I guess, like 25 years or 24 years? That's a lot. That's another change. How did you manage that?
To get a sponsor?
Yeah.
I was sponsoring people, and I felt, you know, it's hard to be sponsoring people and tell these people that you don't have a sponsor. So it was just a decision I made because I felt that it was necessary for me to keep sponsoring people.
And did you work the 12 steps then without a sponsor with this group
yes.
of friends, or how did that work?
I worked the 12 steps in the meetings. We have meetings back then that we used to work the steps, and we read the steps. And so this is how I went through the steps, and I did a lot of reading.
So with the fifth step, where you share your inventory, you did that in a group setting?
No, I shared my inventory with friends.
Okay. All right. We're going to go way back again.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure.
This is probably prior to your meeting your husband, but what is your earliest memory of doing something outside the family? What's your, like, here's Rose and it's not with her, she's in where you get the sense of starting to be an independent person?
After or before the program?
Your first time.
First time in school, when I was in school, and I had a girlfriend in she and her family became very, we became very close. And I will, it's funny because she also, her mom, we never had Thanksgiving in Puerto Rico, so that was a new holiday. And her mom was the first, that was the first place I remember doing Thanksgiving with her family. And it was very interesting. And her mom showed me how to, she was making a lot of different things and stuff. And I never forget, her dad also sold Christmas trees. And me and her used to go there. And I think it was just, I remember it snowing and cold and it being fun to be out there, you know, with the Christmas music playing and all that. So those were good memories I had before, you know.
And so how old were you when you went to Thanksgiving with a friend?
I was around 13, 14, something like that.
And by then you felt good speaking English? You were, yeah, had learned, it was a couple of years after you
mm-hmm,
were here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to stop this because I want to transition into the steps of the program. I thought we could go over those.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about that. Okay, but let's stop for a minute.